Happy Halloween, y'all. Assuming I actually get this episode finished. If you're listening to this and it's not October 31st, you're just going to have to get in your time machine and go back to Halloween and try it again, goddammit. Otherwise, it's your own fault. If it came out on Halloween and you listen to it the next day, that's your own fault. If I put it out on Halloween, we're all good.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
And as always, this is Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where we dig up a film with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. We watch it, talk about it, and vote on whether it's a horror gem or a turd from beyond the grave. Hmm. My name is Cody, and I live in a haunted house, and I am a ghost.
Oh, wow. The big revelation. I'm Beth, and I'm beginning to doubt my commitment to Sparkle Motion.
And I'm Buggy, and I'll show you ghosts, you city cunt.
a retelling.
A retelling of a retelling of a retelling. Well, October is officially coming to a close. We've watched a lot of horror movies this month. At some point, maybe on the next episode, we'll try to come up with a top five, which we do usually. I think I have at least a few candidates this year. Also, assuming this is Halloween, that this is coming out, we'll be in attendance at a screening of The Ring at the Hollywood Theater tonight as part of their queer horror series, which has been on hiatus lately. I don't think they've done one of them for months. I don't remember the last time.
No, but I think that they retired it, but it's resurrected for Halloween.
Woo, yeah. And this is the 2002 version of The Ring with Naomi Watts, one of the only Japanese remakes that was actually good.
Yeah.
So it should be a fun time. It's been a while since I've seen it. Also, Buggy is back. Yay!
I'm back, everybody!
What have you been up to?
I was in California.
Boo.
I was there meeting my boyfriend's family.
Aww.
And it was really great. At a good time. Went to a Lao wedding.
Nice.
It was very fun. Recommend.
Heck yeah. Costumes. I finally came up with a costume idea. I was about ready to say fuck it all because I didn't have anything good. But since we decided to actually go out on Halloween, I thought, okay, fine. I'll put together a costume. And what I'm going to do is random eyes wide shut orgy masquerade guy.
Pantless.
Not American Psycho?
Nope.
That's I've done already been American done. Psycho.
I know. That's like three times.
No, I only did it once.
I thought you did twice.
No. I've been thinking about resurrecting it since I kind of have all the stuff, but I never have.
Really? I don't know why I have this, like, I guess I don't know anything, though. I don't know what people say in movies. I don't know how many times people have worn costumes.
Who's a cunt? Who's not a cunt?
Because I swear to God.
Fair enough.
Maybe it was two events in the same year. No.
No, we went to one Halloween party.
Yeah.
And that was Patrick Bateman.
I'm still going to be Columbo. I got a fake cigar, and that's pretty cool.
Super sick.
I was just going to make one, but I'm lazy, and it was $1 at Lipman's. So
Lipman's.
We went to Lipman's.
Her.
Are you going to dress up?
Yeah, I'm going to be Raven from Teen Titans.
I don't know what that is, but I like the sound of it.
She's just a cool lady whose father is, I think, like, basically the devil.
Oh,
so that'd be cool. He's like an interdimensional god who's also kind of Satan. I don't know how to explain it.
It looks like maybe she has a wedgie.
She does wear an unfortunate leotard that will be a struggle for me. But oh well, it's the one time you get to be hot without people like getting on your dick about it.
I also have a separate work costume, but that's a surprise partner costume with my coworker.
Okay, well, this is gonna come out before anyone listens to it. So.
Yeah, okay, so she's going to be a fun guy because she made this, like, incredible mushroom hat, and I'm half-assing being a square, so I'm just going to wear some broken glasses and affix a square to the top of my head.
Perfect. I like it. Are you going to sing any Huey Lewis while you're doing that?
It is hip to be square.
Yeah. I recommend you memorize that entire song and sing it all day. I used to have the CD. It got stolen in the Kia when the Kia got stolen.
Wait, that was in the Kia? Oh, I remember that, actually.
Yeah, we bought a Huey Lewis CD somewhere.
And a lot of things It was probably free.
I don't know.
You pay for a Huey Lewis
CD? Is he the one with the band?
I probably spent $70 to $80 on that Huey Lewis CD.
It's he's, you know, the one, the Huey Lewis, Back to the Future, the news.
Yeah.
Man.
He's you know, back in time.
Well, he does the I Want a New Drug where he dunks his head in the sink.
Yes, totally. Same guy. Oh, yeah. Same Huey.
He can't play music anymore because every sound he hears sounds terrible on his ears. Yeah, he's got some like terrible ear problem.
Oh, there's a terrible sound.
Okay, perfect. Well, we all have costumes. That's exciting. I feel like it's been a while since we've had costumes. I kind of didn't do much the last couple years.
Why, though?
I don't know. But who cares? We're here to talk about a movie. And this is a movie that Beth selected. What are we watching tonight? What are we listening to? What are we reviewing? We watched it, I guess, while we were watching it. We were listening to it as well.
Yes, and some of us heard different things. We are we are reviewing The Hearse from 1980.
Yes, The Hearse from 1980. As our dog intrudes into the podcast once again.
This kid just got home today.
Heck yeah. Okay, we got The Hearse. This was directed by George Bowers, written by William Blech.
Okay. Whoa, that's a cool name.
I'm assuming his name is William Blyke. I like to read his last name as Blech.
Yeah. I like that better.
And apparently it was based on a concept by Mark Tenser. I don't know who any of these people are. This is starring Trish Van Dever as Jane Hardy, Joseph Cotten as Walter Pritchard. Old Man Pritchard, David Gautreaux as Tom Sullivan, Donald Houghton as Reverend Winston, Perry Lang as Paul Gordon, Med Flory as Sheriff Jack Denton, and we got a little cameo from Christopher McDonald again as Pete. He's some townie. He doesn't have a lot to do with this, but this is his first credited role in a feature film. And I feel like we've been on and on about Christopher McDonald throughout our history, so we might as well talk about him.
Yeah, is this the third? No, at least the second.
Sure. At least the second. I don't know. He's come up multiple times.
Black Room, this.
Yeah. The score was composed by Webster Lewis. We'll talk about the score a bit later. Where can you watch this fucking piece of shit? Amazon Prime. Plex. Fossum, yay, Fossum, our favorite woo. Streaming service, Fossum. You can find it on YouTube for free. There is a Blu-ray available, and apparently this was one of those public domain movies where they just popped up on, cheap horror compilations a lot for many years. Mm. I think before the Blu-ray release, it was just like, buy one, get five movies for $7. And this was like on a bunch of those fucking things. So What is this son of a bitch about there?
All right. Take it away.
Here I go. Here I go.
Sorry, I was called you city cunt.
I mean, I am beloved cunt.
Okay. In a good way.
Okay. So Jane, our main character, is a school teacher from San Francisco. So she is a city cunt.
Sam Fran.
Where you just were?
I was there.
Who decides to spend her post-divorce summer at her aunt's country house, which she just inherited from her mom who died. She's also a woman on the verge. Seems like she's been dealing with some mental health stuff, post-divorce and post-mom loss, and she needs a break. So off to the country, but not to a warm welcome. Jane drives to the small town of Blackford at night and has to call the dude in charge of her aunt's house slash mom's estate, and his name's Mr. Pritchard. He's pissed that she woke him up, and he's generally bitter that she's in town and inheriting the house. The locals are both rude and creepy in turns. The sheriff comments on Jane's body after seeing her out for a jog, and the hardware store owner basically refuses to sell to her. Even the town reverend seems like a creep with an agenda. In addition to the rude townie vibes, Jane is having nightmares and supernatural shit starts happening. Jane is nearly run off the road by a hearse. I know. Titular
the hearse.
The hearse from the film. And the house seems to be haunted. Jane finds her aunt's diary, gets help around the house from the hardware store owner's smitten teenage son, Paul, and meets a hot, seemingly great guy named Tom.
Tom
really wants her to stick around.
Tom Hank.
Nope. Different
Tom Hank, starring as Tom Hank in the Tom Hank story.
Tom Hank is not in this movie. So,
See, you called him that, though.
Oh, motherfuck. Seemingly great guy named Tom, who... Tom Sullivan.
Yes.
Who really... Tom Sullivan's. Who really wants her to stick around. The found diary soon reveals that Jane's aunt was into some Satan shit. Woo. And Tom may not be all he's cracked up to be.
He may just not be.
May not be all he's cracked up to be.
Who's sick?
And, oh yeah, through all of this, the hearse and driver seem to be after Jane. Or has she simply gone mad?
Is she just hysterical?
Is she a hysterical broad?
Is she a WW, a whining woman?
Whining woman, okay, I like it.
Yeah.
Wailing woman.
Okay. Yes.
What did I miss? I mean, I definitely got interrupted.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Passionate about Tom Hank.
I mean, I don't know if you missed too much. I think, you know, this is one of those movies where you could blink and not miss anything, but we'll get to that later. All right. To kick this off, and we can expand on some of the storyline as we go through this exercise, I thought it would be fun to approach this film as if it was an episode of Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm.
Because somewhere along the way in my research, I saw a writer randomly mention that this is the kind of story where we need the Scooby-Doo crew to come along and solve the mystery.
Yeah.
But as we were watching it again, because someone fell asleep the first time.
It wasn't me this time.
I know. I don't know who it was. It wasn't.
Who could it have been?
No, it's always me, but it wasn't.
Wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
Someone did.
Nope.
Anyways, as we were watching it a second time, it became very apparent that this film definitely feels like an episode of Scooby-Doo. And once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Totally.
And so you're going to have to play along with me here. We're just going to kind of go through and ponder the possible motivations of all these characters that are kind of set up as potential culprits or red herrings as Jane meets them along the way upon arriving in Blackford. So first up, obviously, we have old Mr. Pritchard.
Yeah, we do.
He's a greedy lawyer who states early on he thinks Jane's house should be his. Ooh, very...
It's very Scooby-Doo.
Off very the gate. Potential
old man
candidate.
Pritchard.
Yeah.
Off the bat, is that how you say that? It's not off the gate. Off the gate.
Off the gate.
Where the gate
right
came
out,
from.
Straight out the gate.
Oh, there you go. Out the gate, off the bat.
So yeah, we get old Mr. Pritchard right away. He definitely seems like he could be up to something. Is he driving the hearse? Is he causing the hauntings in the house?
Hmm.
We have a telephone repairman that shows up. This guy, he gets there pretty early in the storyline. We never follow up on him. He's a good-looking character. Seems like he could be a red herring, but we never see him again.
Yeah, I was like, I don't even fucking remember the telephone repair. Yeah.
What about the boy?
Oh, we'll get to the boy. I heard they call you the boy, but where's the man? Because I ain't seen him yet. Matter of fact, I won't finish it. Okay, who do we got next? Sheriff Jack Denton. Definitely one of those characters that seems to want to chase Jane out of town. Not only that, but he's very inappropriate.
Hey, I saw you jogging down County Road this morning. I'm not one to forget a pretty face, if you know what I mean.
I think I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, he's a perv. Yeah, I don't, there's not usually, maybe some.
There's always a sheriff perv wandering around.
Creeping on Daphne.
Yeah, creeping on Daphne.
What could his motivation be? We'll find out. We have a variety of distressful locals that don't want to go anywhere near Jane's aunt's house.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the shop owners, they don't want to deliver any shit out there. There could be something creepy going on, or maybe they're just trying to get in on the deal.
Yep.
Who knows? Oh, we got Paul, the boy. The local boy.
Back to the boy.
Yeah, he's got a crush on Jane. Maybe he has something to do with what's going on here. Maybe he's the one creeping around her house.
Yeah.
Maybe he's trying to spook her so he could, like, drive her into his arms.
Mayhaps.
He's a teenager.
Obviously, you noted Reverend Winston. You know, I don't trust any priests, but he keeps showing up trying to be helpful, but also
weird.
Creepy.
He's kind of shady too. Like he makes certain comments where I'm like, oh, that's like, that's kind of a read. Like he's talking to what's her name, the main character, and he's like, maybe the country or maybe this place just like isn't for you.
There's a lot of that.
And then he's like, well, I have to go. And he like leaves immediately. Like, what a little cunt.
Totally.
Yeah.
And we got Tom Sullivan, Jane's love interest. Now, let me say this. There's something off with this guy from the get-go. Red flags all over the place about this dude.
Tom, look over there.
What?
There's somebody following us. Over there. Do you see the headlights?
You'd better sit down. It's probably kids. That's County Road, a notorious lover's lane.
I'm not so sure. Seems every time we meet, I'm afraid of something, or I think someone's following me.
Is someone after you?
I don't know what Jane sees in him, but he creeps me out personally.
He's handsome.
Peep the eyebrows, guys. The eyebrows show the indication of his evilness.
She's also, you know, fragile right now, so.
She is vulnerable, and he's nice, and I think that adds to it, right? It's like, out of all of the men and people she's encountering, Tom is the only one who's sort of, like, validating her concerns and, like, being nice and hearing her out.
And not telling her to leave town. And when the hearse runs her off the road, he brings her home.
Exactly.
And he doesn't do anything, like, he doesn't, like, you know, grab her boobs or anything.
Yeah, he's, like, very, like, gentlemanly. Or is he?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, where are those meddling kids?
Yeah, so long story short here. The way this movie sets up the characters, it really kind of feels like somebody may be up to something, or maybe they're in cahoots.
Mm-hmm.
And once you kind of look at it through the lens of a Scooby-Doo episode, you kind of start to look sideways at every single person you see as you go along.
That makes it more fun. It wasn't the length of a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah, well, you know.
Could have benefited from that. Sorry.
That's okay. So, the interesting thing about this movie is that going in, my assumption that it was going to be primarily one of those movies about evil car, in this case, an evil hearse.
Mm-hmm.
But it quickly begins to set shit up as a classic haunted house flick. And here's an interesting note. So, Tish Van Diever, who played Jane, was married to George C. Scott at the time. Everybody knows George C. Scott.
Sure, sure.
This movie came out in 1980 at the same time as another movie called The Changeling, which is one of the best haunted house movies ever made.
Pretty good.
And that movie also starred none other than Tish Van Diever and George C. Scott. Interesting.
And a little fact about that that I read is they were trying to buy a new house. So they were like, let's make a couple horror movies to finance our new house.
That's smart.
Yeah. I wish I could do that. I wish someone would just come along and be like, hey, could you act in a horror movie? And then I could buy a new house.
We have a nice, by the way, that's the family update is we have a shower.
That's true.
Now we don't have a floor or a sink.
No.
But we do have a toilet and a shower.
Yes. I don't know which one is which. I've been... Yeah, using them they're interchangeable,
and that's why we're making this podcast to finance. Just kidding.
I saw an interesting little tidbit from a post on Mondo Digital that posited that this movie was designed to cash in on Trish Van Diever's recent role in The Changeling.
Is her name Trish or Tish? Because I feel like you've said both.
Trish, I don't know.
It's the same. There's an R. She's a city cunt.
Is this one of those?
Good enough. Close enough.
Are you saying that city crunt and city
crunt? She's a city crunt. And I don't like
crunt
her.
Crunt is my new word,
I
think.
Crunt. You're a crunt. We're all crunts.
Coinage.
At the end of the day.
Uh-oh.
All right, quit crunting around. Listen.
The females in the crew are sick, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, we are.
We got some sick crunts over here.
Sick
bars. I'm not that sick anymore. But
hella sick. Y'all. Hella sick.
Sit tight crunts.
But here's the thing.
Come on. Put her there, crunt. Anyway.
Stop high-fiving. This is serious business.
Sorry, we're back. We're the Medlin kids.
Serious business. We're getting
into. Serious business. Sorry.
There are some spooky things that happen throughout this storyline, particularly around what's going on in the house. You know, we have doors and windows slamming shut or blowing open. We got spectral appearances of Jane's dead aunt.
That is, you know, in mirrors and stuff. Yes. Yeah. Looking out windows. Yeah, that was.
We got lights going out. We got the camera creeping around the exterior of the house, peeping in windows. Although this also alludes to the possibility that someone is actually creeping around outside and inside the house. For example, there's also shots of feet creeping around and up the stairs. And we almost have a psycho-esque creeping up on Jane in the shower scene.
There is a shower scene, too, I think.
That's kind of interesting. Obviously, Jane is having these creepy nightmares. The scene where she envisions herself being transported in the hearse to her own funeral is kind of the pinnacle of the scary scenes in this movie. And then, of course, Jane encounters a little girl that introduces the idea that she's living in a haunted house and may be a ghost herself.
Well, hello there. What's your name?
Alice. But my mommy told me not to say hello to you.
Now, why would she tell you that?
Because you live in a funny house.
I live in a funny house, do I? What's so funny about my house?
It's haunted. And you're a ghost.
And kids call her a witch at some point.
Yeah.
But I guess that's not a...
Totally. Know. But it's kind of interesting thinking about this. Instead of being a kind of haunted car movie, is it a haunted house movie? And if so, how did it do as a haunted house movie? Like, if you were going into this thinking, I'm going to watch a haunted house movie, what would you get out of it?
I mean... Here's the thing. We have bingo cards.
Yes.
And I feel like we each got like five or six squares watching this again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does have all those like something scary in a mirror, you know, whatever the fuck. I don't know.
I mean, like
drape sheets, fabric. I mean, it like hits all those things, but I'm not trying to get too much into my like opinion, but it just doesn't do them very well. Or... I mean, we're going to talk about it being PG, and that's part of it.
Yeah.
Which isn't always the point worth anything is lost. Sometimes things that are PG are great.
Oh, yeah.
But it just doesn't, like, have any, like...
Well, yeah, there's no, like, oomph.
There's no weight or something.
Yeah, like, there's no, like, oh, suspense. Whoa, like, this crazy ghost thing. Just it feels like just very, like, lukewarm, like, ghost activity.
Yeah, do you think it, what do you think? Do you think it's because it goes between them too quickly or and doesn't build tension or the music is kind of whack?
Yeah. I mean, I thought there was a, I thought there was some interesting components that the film maybe didn't capitalize on. And I will save a lot of this for later, but you know, there's a lot of these classic haunted house tropes. And then there's also the concept of maybe it's somebody lurking around, which I think gives it that Scooby-Doo element
where it's
like, oh, is someone doing this or is there actual supernatural activity? But it just doesn't lean into that. So you don't really know. It's just kind of like, here's a random spooky thing. Okay, back to whatever. Here's a random spooky thing. Okay, back to whatever. And I feel like, oh, maybe we could have tied those together a bit.
And there's the is she just losing her mind thing, which also isn't really...
A little bit, yeah.
It's not like super dealt... I mean, because sometimes it's like all this stuff's happening and then she wakes up.
Yeah.
That happens at least twice, I think, where it's like, oh, that was a dream.
Mm-hmm.
The dreams were, I guess, a little bit more like...
The church thing is kind of...
Yeah, like ooky spooky.
Which that reminds me, another movie that we have reviewed, The Nightwalker, there were some things in this that I felt like...
I was thinking that too, yeah.
Shades of that, like the whole church thing and the whole, like, this woman, is she just hysterical or is somebody doing this to her? Which in that movie, someone is like purposely trying to make her go crazy because they have a material interest.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
And that's kind of what I feel like this movie was, I don't know if it was trying to set that up or if it just accidentally kind of introduced those ideas into it. But then like, they never had a plan to sort of follow up on that, but Yeah, I was definitely thinking of the Nightwalker also, especially the dream sequences mm-hmm. seem to be kind of similar in the way that they were trying to explain something going on in the film.
Yeah, music makes such a big, like sound design. Like yeah. I think this movie had music that felt like a made-for-TV movie or a soap opera, like vacillating between that and like...
Totally. Yeah, I had that.
Yeah, so it didn't get a chance. Like, if this had, like, a score by Goblin, it would have been a totally right. different...
Yeah, I had it in my notes, and I read somewhere that, you know, somebody kind of compared the main sort of creepy theme to basically a knockoff of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Which, when it gets into that area, it's kind of effective, but then it jumps really quickly back to, like, Lifetime movie... from the late 70s, early 80s, kind of cheese factor.
Some piano shit. I mean, yeah. not, you know, I'm not anti-piano.
I hate pianos. Fuck pianos.
Here, coming out as anti-piano. No, but it like is anti- too... Man, what was the other... Oh, Arrow Beach that had the fucking weird...
But that yeah. like worked though.
Because it was so weird.
Because it, yeah, the whole thing was just like so bizarre and like uncomfortable Lou that Rawls it worked. And,
yeah.
Hmm. So kind of building off of this idea about the haunted house, the question that I've been pondering is this a haunted car movie or a haunted house movie? Because a lot of the reviews mention going into it thinking that we're going to get something like The Car or Christine yeah. or Duel or Killdozer, all of these sort of late 70s, early 80s. Evil car movies, whether there's like an evil driver or like an actual haunted car. But then when we get into it, it really starts to feel more like a haunted house, but there is this hearse element. And here's an interesting thing I was thinking today. So Jane moves to the city of Blackford, and then I was pondering, is the hearse a Ford? That is,
is it a black Ford?
Is it a black Ford? But no, it's not. It's a 1952 Packard funeral coach.
Okay.
And I learned that Ford doesn't actually make hearses. They do make the components for other vehicles that are converted into hearses. But Ford doesn't actually make hearses.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a Ford hearse. They're usually like Cadillacs. The ones you see that are still driving are usually Cadillacs.
Yeah.
That people drive like as they're like to see you, you're next or whatever. There's a hearse in our neighborhood that says, see you soon. Is that what the license plate is? See you soon. And that's a caddy, I think.
Yeah. It's sitting right outside my dad's place.
No, it's not. It's blocks, mere blocks away.
But thinking about that, for a movie called The Hearse that seems to be advertising itself as like a haunted car movie, does it really feel like this titular hearse is utilized enough? Is it random? Is it... Does it fit in the storyline?
I feel like they like kind of as an afterthought, like named it that, you know, like that's kind of what it feels like. Like maybe they had a different title and that was just like the one title where it was like, yeah, like let's call it The Hearse because it is a haunted house movie.
And The Hearse person kind of.
Yeah.
Too.
And The Hearse is like part of it. And mainly like the driver, I feel like is like more like the prominent aspect of it. Not really like the hearse itself.
He's a little creepy. He's actually kind of effectively creepy when you see him.
Yeah, he does show up, but you never know if he's actually there or if it's part of the dream.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a good point is that maybe the standout element was that it was a hearse driver and then they named it that.
Yeah, could be.
I don't know.
There's an interesting monologue by old man Pritchard talking about Satan stealing the hearse with the driver Jane's aunt's coffin along with it. And maybe this is...
Why?
This is why she's being haunted by this hearse, and she's just like, you're the one driving the hearse.
What the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about the hearse that carried your aunt's body. Crashed. On the Blackford Bridge, it exploded into flames, and all that was left was a charred mass of metal. Stranger than that, there was no sign of the driver or your aunt's coffin. That Robert fella, he just disappeared.
Come on, Pritchard.
It was all in the paper. They called it some sort of a freak accident.
But I'm not so sure about that.
What aren't you so sure about?
Well, some people say that the devil himself reached up and grabbed that hearse and dragged it down to the fiery depths of hell. And it's still roaming the old county road in search of victims.
Yeah.
And then he turns out to just be a waster.
Well, and that's the Scooby-Doo element, too, is that it's like, who's driving the hearse? Is it old man Pritchard? Is it young man Tom? Is it the boy Paul? Who's driving that hearse?
Exactly. And speaking of cars, how many shots do we get of Jane running to her car when something spooky happens?
It has to be the same shot.
Yeah, it looks like it could be the same shot every time.
She often runs to her car from the same point of the house at the same angle to her car parked in the same spot. And I have a feeling they just used the same shot. Because it's at night kind of too, which is a little harder to film sometimes in this era. So yeah, I think they just like looped it.
It's very possible. So we kind of talked about the haunted house elements. There's got this haunted potential evil hearse. Maybe somebody's driving it. We don't know. We didn't really mention the satanic angle that much other than in your recap.
Yeah.
But they do kind of get into this. There's sort of a diary through line that plays throughout this film where Jane realizes her aunt was a Satanist and was involved with a romantic interest who was a Satanist.
Yeah.
And there's a diary.
Yeah, the diary.
It was like she was supposed to marry some nice guy, Lewis, and then she met
Robert.
Yeah.
They fell in love and her body and her soul is his.
Yeah, it sounds like she kind of was like hypnotized and then they got into some Satan shit and then the church people know about it and there's like a whole.
Yeah.
And much like the Nightwalker, there's some weird kind of like shadow service thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's one of those things where they introduce it like it's going to be really important, but then maybe it kind of is one of the storylines that dangles a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the Reverend Winston shows up at some point and points to Jane's locket, which belonged to her aunt. Was like, don't show that to anybody because it's a symbol of Satan.
The aunt element is the one element that I thought was kind of interesting because that's the thing I like, you know, because there's this whole Jane looks a lot like her aunt. You see photos of her or a photo of her or maybe there's two because there's one with her and Robert later, but she looks a lot like her aunt. And I always think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So you think maybe that's it. You know, she's like carrying the torch of her aunt. I don't know.
Yeah. I could see that. Because also people talk about that all the time and they also say she's like a ghost.
Yeah. So that was one cool, like when you think, oh, maybe Jane's dead.
Right. Or like I think they were more going for like, you look like your aunt who's fucking dead. So you're the ghost of your aunt for real.
Yeah. So this movie is rated PG, and it kind of feels like a TV movie, made for TV movie, although it was not made for TV. It's just rated PG. So this is maybe a stupid question because I guess it depends on the context. But when you have a PG horror film and it isn't specifically designed for children, which I would argue this is not a film specifically designed for children, can a PG horror film compete with a horror film that's R-rated?
I'll just say The Watcher in the Woods.
Right, which I was going to point that out, but I was like, ironically enough, that is a kids movie.
But is it really, though?
It is, but that's what's kind of interesting about it, is it's like, same with like Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah,
like,
those are Disney movies.
It's like same era. Where it's like, yeah, these are like technically curated for kids, but they also are like diving into some like more intense concepts.
And, you know,
and they're kind of
scary. Something Wicked This Way Comes is obviously based on a book that wasn't necessarily for kids. Right. Like we all read it in fucking school for some reason, but Ray Bradbury did not write that book.
It's not really like, it is about kids, but I think it's not like designed for children. But at the same time, it kind of is. It feels like that.
Ghost stories can be really effective and scary if they're done right and you see nothing. But the problem is when a movie doesn't have anything to like fall back on, and there isn't any like funny gore or funny dialogue, really. Like, Mr. Pritchard says some funny shit every once in a while. He doesn't say cunt, unfortunately. He does.
And this is like a what is it called? Like a Mandela effect.
Like, no.
Everyone no. thinks he didn't. But if you...
The Berenstain Bears strike again.
Wait, oh yeah, because it's the Berenstain Bears, right? But no one would ever say that.
I don't remember.
Ever.
People talk a lot about the Berenstain Bears and the Berenstain Bears, but I'm here to tell you that neither of them existed ever.
That's what I thought.
They don't exist.
Oh, fuck.
Google search them now. No history of them. They've been wiped from the internet.
No stain.
Yeah, there's been no stain left by the Bears. Yeah, so I think it's an interesting concept. And obviously in this era, we were right before the PG-13 rating was created, which created a bit of a spectrum between PG and R. Because at some point, you could actually kind of see some maybe scary or gnarly stuff in a PG movie before that kind of mid-rating was created. But here's some examples of PG horror movies that I think are effective. Poltergeist.
Oh, Poltergeist is PG. Wow.
Yeah. Jaws.
Oh, facts.
Carnival of Souls.
Oh, yeah.
Gremlins.
I can't believe, I mean, Gremlins would definitely be rated PG-13.
Does, that feels a little bit like a kid's movie, but it's still PG.
But there's like guts and blood. Yeah.
There's
and
no guts in it. People do get eaten.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, okay.
The 70s one. There's full nudity in that film.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Good times.
Phantom of the Paradise.
Aww.
That's PG?
Yeah.
That's because there wasn't PG-13, though.
That's true, I guess.
Burnt Offerings, another great late 70s haunted house.
See, you can
film.
Do it right.
So, yeah, it's an interesting concept where, like, I feel like you could lean on the, oh, this is just PG, so, like, it's not effective because, you know, you couldn't do any creepy, gory, nasty stuff. But there are examples of movies that are PG that are very effective that had scary things that didn't rely on like graphic gore or just dicks being chopped off or anything like that. So interesting thing to ponder. And then you have to start to think about like, okay, where did this fail in the filmmaking or the writing?
Yeah. I mean, this movie just would have been a lot more fun if it was rated R. Cause a lot.
I think so. Yeah.
You could have just had like more like
penis,
more penis, more tit, but also just more like, there are some deaths in this movie. Paul, spoiler, spoiler kind of, but Paul, the you know, chore boy, dies and you don't, I mean, you literally, it's like, and he's gone.
Yeah, it's like a freeze frame, like how a movie would end.
Yeah.
But then you're like, the movie just keeps going.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think those things suffer. But you could also just have been more clever with it.
Reckon.
You know, like there are ways to do that where it's actually scary or suspenseful, where it doesn't need to like, you don't need to see his head exploding or decapitation or something.
Yeah. So maybe the supernatural elements of this aren't that scary, but you know what is scary? Men.
Men.
True.
And this isn't, you know, we can't do a Jim Hunt episode without getting into some woke shit.
It's woke time.
So let's talk about men. Found this interesting little quote from a blog post on Spooky Little Girl about this movie. It says, upon arrival, Jane discovers that the town is populated exclusively by male sex offenders and potential rapists who eye her lasciviously with varying degrees of both lust and disdain, barely concealed and in equal measure. Each scene is fraught with tension as you repeatedly wonder whether you're about to learn that naive, trusting Jane just invited the wrong man into her house.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting angle, and it kind of got me thinking, you know, I feel like once she gets to the town of Blackford, basically every man is kind of like mad at her, but also sort of like angling for some action.
Or wants something from her.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point of conversation because while I don't feel the film did this well, it does seem to teeter-totter back and forth between these supernatural elements and then, you know, this storyline about all these men who are just kind of interacting with her sort of nefariously throughout the film. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all terrible. They won't help her. They talk about her body.
Yeah.
The sheriff, she runs to the sheriff after like one of the incidents with the hearse. And this is a quote. He, you know, he's basically treating her like she's a dumb, hysterical broad. And he says, it's open season on Pretty City Girls, which is like, wow, thanks for your help,
bitch. And he was like saying, like, don't you know this used to be a sport? Like, he literally said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing is that I feel like there was a great angle for maybe some commentary or maybe some additional tension because of this, but the film seems to treat it with a bit of a, like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, haha, all the men in town think Jane is hot and they want to bang her. And like,
they're
that's
so
like
stupid.
Funny. Like that's the comedy
well,
element
maybe
or something.
That's the 1980 of it all.
I guess so.
You know, like maybe know. That's just like straight up. Oh, this is how we talk about
it. It's very like, oh, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we have this subplot with Paul and all of his buddies, including Christopher McDonald's character.
Talking
and
about her.
Yeah, they're basically just obsessing over whether Paul has banged her or not yet.
Yeah.
And like, I swear, I do think I'm wrong about this, but I swear when like you hear Christopher McDonald speaking, they like overdubbed his voice with a black man.
He does sound dubbed. Whoa. I don't know what, but
it's
it
like,
is weird.
He's like doing up. Like he does not look like he's supposed to sound. Like he looks like some like small town townie, and he's just like, I don't know.
Another thing about, so that character Paul is supposed to be like there's a point where she says, "Oh, if I was 16." So I think he's supposed to be like 16 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is one weird, you know, so yeah, he's like joking with his buddies about her and like how he's going to get her a date. And then he's got like some incel energy when she
definitely
is not interested in him. And he's a kid. But then she does. And I was saying this both times we watch it. She keeps touching him, though.
She does. But I mean,
like,
you do have a point.
Blaming her. But it's like, oh, Paul. And she's like rubbing it. And she's a teacher.
Right.
And she should know better than to like touch a teenage boy that she knows has the hots for her. Just saying. And maybe in 1980 that wasn't.
Right. Or maybe like, you know, about. I don't know. Maybe she's not thinking about it like that. You know, because all her touches, it's not like she's like touching
it's
his
not
like,
sexual.
Like chest or anything. She's just like patting him and being like, oh, you.
Rubbing his hands. And yeah, which I guess maybe if you see yourself.
I did see the hand rubbing thing though. And I was kind of like,
When you know someone has a crush on you and they're a child.
Well, she didn't know at that point, but I was like, why are you feeling his hand so much?
Yeah.
What do you want to know?
I touch all the children, I think, okay. Have a crush on me. Okay.
Luckily, that's zero.
So, yes, we have some creepy, threatening men. Not a lot of other women characters in this movie other than Jane. I mean, there's some very kind of limited tangential female characters that are here and there. She does have one friend she talks to a couple times, but
you see at the beginning and then she talks to her
early
the phone.
On. And yeah. But yeah, it's basically just Jane versus a bunch of like towny men that all have some kind of weird angle.
The hardware store guy has a wife.
Yes.
Who also doesn't like her.
And there's someone that, why can I not remember the main character's name? Jane like sees that lady talking to the reverend. There's like that one lady,
oh, the church lady,
the church lady, where she's like, who the hell is that church lady?
Because she was in her dream.
Yeah
But they're not really like fleshed out characters.
No,
they're just sort
all.
Of like details. They're like a swinging sign or something.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, we've gone through all of my points. Is there anything else that we need to talk about in this movie?
Really was pretty uneventful.
Yeah, I got nothing.
My one little teeny point is I do love seeing old school California on film. Like when you see San Francisco at the beginning it's all like one story. You can see down to the bay.
The mountains too. Like
then,
when you get out a little farther,
it's
really
northern,
pretty.
I think it's like farther northern California where she's supposed to be. And it's just like, if you envision what this place looks like now, it's like, I'm sure.
Totally.
Multi-million dollar mansion. So I do always
everywhere,
think it's kind of fun. I mean, that's true in like Washington and Oregon too, but especially in California when you've been there enough times and you're like, I know what this city looks like and it's not like this anymore.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing about sort of the look and feel of it as the movie's kind of setting up and you're kind of getting a lay of the land of where this supposedly small town is, mm-hmm. which is really not that far out of the Bay Area. Yeah. I think a lot of it was filmed in Oakland and the surrounding areas. But it was reminding me a bit of Phantasm, which was also kind of filmed around that area. Not all of it. A lot of that movie was filmed in Los Angeles, but there was some stuff filmed around the Bay Area back in the day. And it really does have this interesting feel where it's like, oh, this doesn't exist anymore.
The West Coast didn't used to be so full of buildings and people.
Totally.
I mean, even like when we were kids. I mean, this was from 1980.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, right around the same time as Phantasm, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting. I like that point. It does really, it looks cool. Like, and I mean, even when we watched The Black Room, which came out in 82.
Same, the L.A.
And they were like, the in the Hollywood Hills, and they were dirt roads or whatever. And it's like,
yeah,
dirt roads in Los Angeles, give me a break, you know?
Yeah, but, like there's one house and it's all, yeah. No, I mean, that's like Chinatown too. I mean, that's different film. But like that movie and what the landscape of Los Angeles, it's cool. It's a document. So that it has that going for it. It's a document.
Yes. Are we ready to do some business on this thing?
Yes. Business. I'm going to do business all over it.
Okay. We're going to do some dirty business on this. First up, let's do an obscurity rating. This has 2,661 Voits.
John Voits.
John Voits on the IMDb machine. There are 59 critic reviews on IMDb. There are a mere 4 Rotten Tomatoes reviews. Again, Rotten Tomatoes seems to have a recency bias, but whatever. And as far as I could tell, there are about 4 places that you can watch this film online, a couple for free, and I mentioned there was a Blu-ray release. All in all, we're at about a middle-of-the-road 5 for this son of a bitch.
Okay.
Seems about right. I don't know. You know, kind of learning about, when I first heard about it, I was like, I've never heard about this. Seems like kind of an obscurity. But then you kind of hear about how it like popped around on all of these horror compilations and like, you know, maybe somebody picked it up at Rite Aid for $2 at some point. I was like, okay, I kind of get it. Yeah. Just like fell
and
out.
And I almost saw the actors in it or in quite a few. Like the guy who plays Tom is like a character actor that's been in a million things. And
yeah, indeed.
I think the old man Pritchard is like in fucking Citizen Kane or some shit.
Whoa, that movie.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
The greatest movie ever made.
Yes.
Until
heard
the
it's
hearse.
About a sled or something. I don't know.
That's what I thought.
Spoiler enough.
Let's do a vote. Let's vote upon this. Is it a turd? Is it a gem? We will find out in one moment upon the count of 3. And here we go. And a 3, and a 2, and a 1.
Is this twice in a row?
No, I don't think it is. But here is what we have come up with our thumb vote. We have 3 thumbs down. We have uncovered a turd from the cat box.
I did it again, folks.
That's okay. I made a turd on my last pick also.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. Nadja had a 1 because that's where we compromised and got in trouble.
Oh, yeah, we did because if we do that, we break the rules
from the couch.
I still stand by that, though.
Yeah.
So we made a turd, which means we need to justify our turd making. Who wants to go first and talking shit? Because that's all we're going to do is talk shit, I guess.
I will, because I picked it. There was just nothing to it. And it would have benefited from either being grosser or more ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was trying to be serious and trying to be scary. And there was just like literally nothing to it. And we did, like Cody was saying, we watched it twice. And watching it again, I was like, I'm so sorry we have to watch this again. And it wasn't just because he fell asleep. It was like, literally, we watched it a couple weeks ago because of your, timing with your trip and stuff. And it was just totally vanished from my mind.
Yeah, you can't even remember.
I couldn't, get a hook in anything. I mean, Mr. Pritchard, when he got drunk, was kind of funny.
Yeah, he was.
When he called someone a crunt. But other than that, it was like, anyway, that's all I have to say. It just wasn't even, and there was nothing like the acting was fine. The cinematography was fine. The music was kind of whack, like I said, because it was all over the place, but not in a funny way. Yeah, just kind of a trying to make a horror movie without understanding what a horror movie is or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. What do you think?
I mean, I kind of agree with what Mom said. Like, it just wasn't, like, doing enough for me. And I feel like it's kind of one of those movies where all of the times it was trying to be like, look, it's this twist, or like, look, it's this scary thing. It just, like, fell flat. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, right. And there's just, like, not a lot going on. You know, the settings aren't very interesting. Like, I feel like also the house they chose, like,
yeah,
it's not really, like, a very, like, haunted house.
It doesn't feel like a haunted house, no. Yeah, good point.
It doesn't, like, have that vibe. And I also just felt like, yeah, like, every character's, like, pretty forgettable, too. Like, they're not really, like, even, like, bad enough, you know? Like, they're not even, like, evil enough to be like, damn, all those people were, like, fucking evil. They're all just kind of, like, lame and weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the main character also really has no, like, discernible personality other than, like, she's going out of town. She got a divorce.
And they even try, there's a little bit about her mental health, but then they don't even get into that.
But it's also, yeah, like, the mental health combo is just, like, I think that's what they're going for with the therapist is, like, it's weirdly dismissive. Or, like, weird. It's like, why is the therapist, like, questioning and doubting her so hardcore? She's like, I'm going to go out of town. No, it's her therapist.
Oh, yes, her therapist. Yeah. I forgot.
And he's like, do you think, though, really, stuff's going to get better, like, when you come back? Or it's like, damn, dude. Like, what do you therapist. Mean by that?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I picked up on some of that, too. You know, there wasn't a cohesive threat or central villain that was defined in any way that builds any tension. You know, there's some vague spookiness. We have the hearse, but nothing's really connected. And so you're just kind of like, what am I supposed to be scared of?
That's a good point. Yeah.
We have a bit of mystery building throughout the film, but it doesn't necessarily feel like it's connected to any of the spooky supernatural stuff that's going on. I mentioned the music, it kind of bounces between like slightly spooky and then like downright cheesy, like Lifetime movie, which really kind of takes you out of it at some points. I thought the acting was fine, but no one stands out really. Even Tish Van Diver as the lead actress does a perfectly fine job, but doesn't like elevate it, and no one else really elevates it. Old Man Pritchard, as you noted, funny in moments, but not enough there to like, you know, save it. He's not, what's his name from Sinister?
The guy.
Yeah, that guy. Doesn't matter. There's too many loose ends also for me. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there was all these ideas that were introduced that either became plot holes or just became irrelevant. Mm-hmm. The whole Satan angle could have been a thing that wasn't. You know, there was this whole thing where the preacher's like, you have that emblem of Satan on you. Don't show it to anyone. And she finds the diary. And then it's, you know, maybe you could connect something that happens later in the end. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, I don't know. That's an angle that really didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So there's some of that. Some of the spooky elements work, I thought. You know, a little bit of the haunted house stuff was okay. Some of the spooky dreams were okay, but it's nothing new. We've seen it before. And it just drags, man.
Yeah.
Like you were saying last night when we were watching it, like, how can a 90-minute movie feel so long?
Oh, I know. It was only 90 minutes, and I want that 90 minutes back.
But yeah. Yeah. About like 2 hours, 3 hours.
I saw somebody say this, and I can't remember where. I wish I could give him credit because I think it was a perfect statement. Just everything about this movie plays it too safe.
Yeah.
There's like, they don't lean into any of the scary stuff. They don't lean into any of the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there that's really challenging you at all. It's just super, super superficial and like surface level.
Yeah, like here's the template for a horror movie.
Yeah, but that's okay. Sometimes you have to eat a turd.
Absolutely.
I'm going to do better on my next selection.
That's, okay, that's the whole point of this thing, man, is we're searching. We're spelunking.
What if it was great?
Exactly. Actually, I already picked what I'm going to do next, I think.
Ooh, nice.
Nice.
Because it's one from October. Oh, maybe I should wait a little bit. But I did, there was one movie that, so there's been a few good ones, but one that kind of stood out to me that I want Buggy to watch too.
Okay, well, we've dug up a turd. And once we dug up a turd, it's time for a little thing we like to call special time.
Special time.
What do we have on deck for special time tonight?
Well, I was actually inspired by this movie.
Oh, and you were inspired by this movie after
all? Yeah, so it actually really inspired me. No, you know, thinking about this movie and some of the elements of it made me think of a movie that does part of what this movie does. Men, the movie from 2022.
That, who wants them? Who has them?
Like some of the stuff Cody said when speaking about this movie at the end, about how it's all these sinister men. She goes to this town and that's what she encounters. The movie Men, that's actually what it's about. It's kind of a similar setup. It's a widow who's moving to the country after her husband has died. Whereas, you know, in the fucking hearse, it was a divorce. But she goes to the country and she encounters all these sinister fucking men. But it is so well done. And Buggy and I were talking about it a little bit before, and she hasn't seen it. And I think a lot of people haven't. And
because I remember, like, the consensus about it was, like, this movie wasn't what people expected. So I don't think it was, like, necessarily received well. But I could be wrong.
I think it was, well, I did a teeny bit of digging. I want to watch it again. Cody and I saw it in the theater when it came out. I saw, it's funny because when I looked it up, one of the first things that came up was someone on Reddit saying, Men is an incredibly good movie and I hated watching it.
Yeah, that's a good
and I think that might be part of it. And Buggy was saying, you know, it could have been one of those things where the trailer billed it as one thing. The guy who made it, Alex Garland, is 28 days later, 28 years later.
Ex Machina?
Did he make that? I'm looking. He did. Yes.
Yeah.
So people really like him, and he made this movie, and I think it had a mixed response, but I just highly recommend it. It was fucking great. And another thing, and so we, like I said, we saw it in the theater, and I think I'd be interested to know people's reaction to it based on their lived experience in their gender, because Cody was like, wow, that was fun. And I was like, oh my God, that was horrifying. And not that you didn't think it was horrifying. We've had this conversation before. But I just think watching it as a woman, you're like, oh my God. Like, how many of those situations have you been in where you're like, I feel mildly threatened by this person. Am I overreacting? And the whole movie plays out like that. And then it goes wild. And that's all I want to say about it. I just think, like, thinking about the stupid fucking hearse and the element of it being a town full of men who have an agenda where they're vaguely sinister, but they also want to bang you. Men takes that and runs with it. And it's a great movie and people should watch it.
Yeah.
And Jessie Buckley, that's the main actress. She's fantastic. And Rory Kinnear plays the men. I don't think that's a spoiler. He's all the men, and that's fucking cool too.
Yeah. No, it's a movie I definitely want to rewatch. I don't know if I would describe it as fun as you put upon me, but it definitely was effective and it was terrifying.
And different and great. Yeah. And went somewhere, did something, said something.
Yeah. And yes, indeed, as a man, I probably didn't fully grasp all of the terrifying elements of the film, but I think the film does a good job of laying it out there in a way that you don't have to necessarily have that lived experience to experience what the film is giving you. I actually feel like it's a good way to kind of introduce what that might be to people never thought about it.
Yeah. Men should watch Men.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and definitely like good connection to this film.
I mean,
that's what this film could have been.
Cody writes us notes because he's a good helper, and one of his bullet points was threatening men, and I was like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Men.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
Go woke, go broke.
We went woke, we went broke, we spent all of our money on a bathroom. So here's the deal. October's coming to an end. We'll have another brief recap of things at some point, and then our top fives, hopefully in the next episode. I am going to pick a movie from October for my next episode. However, I haven't decided yet, because if you didn't know, we don't actually record on the day we release these. We record before that. So when we're recording, it's not actually Halloween.
Whoa.
Ooh, spooky.
I didn't know that.
So that means that there's still some movies that we will be watching between now and Halloween when this episode comes out. Some of the things we have watched, and we're not doing a recap, just a couple things that I wanted to note. We watched a movie called The Ebola Syndrome.
Yeah, that was fun.
We'll talk about that later. The Nest.
Uh-huh.
I watched a movie called Schizo the other night. Remember that name, Schizo. We watched a Dutch film called De Pool, also known as The Pool. We watched a movie called Birth, Rebirth.
Uh-huh.
Kind of a Frankenstein deal. And then we have a handful coming up. We're going to watch a movie called Thirst, The A-Frame. We have She Creature, Until Dawn, and Skinner. And we'll get back to you on all of those. And then we'll go see The Ring tonight when this episode comes out.
But we're going to have to watch Tremors while we carve pumpkins.
We can do that as well.
That's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So until then, happy Halloween. Thank you for celebrating this month with us. I'm glad that we survived.
We haven't fucked. Oh, yes. It's Halloween and we survived. Yay.
This shall be the last one.
Of what?
Days.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Good night.
Dirt Dogs on a Gym Hunt. We'll be right back.